The last case of the day is number 043378, the United States against Lachey. Mr. Holtzman.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Michael Holtzman, and I represent John Lachey. As the court is well aware, Mr. Lachey was convicted after a jury trial of two counts, one of obstruction of justice and one of immigration fraud. As to the obstruction of justice count, we are seeking the reversal and dismissal of this count for insufficient evidence. As to the other count concerning the sentencing on the immigration count, or actually the sentencing as to both counts, we are seeking a remand and resentencing by the trial judge. I'd like to, the issues involved in this case, Your Honors, are fairly straightforward. As to the first count, the insufficiency of the evidence, as the court is well aware, in order to reverse a jury verdict based on insufficiency of the evidence, the government has, you have to ask whether any rational jury could have found the defendant guilty of attempting to influence a witness's testimony beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a pretty strict burden to meet. However, in these facts, I believe that that burden has been met. If you were the only testimony that was given, only evidence that was given in support of this obstruction of justice count, Your Honor, of which my client was convicted, is the testimony of James Clark. Now, I don't know if the word waffle describes testimony, but Mr. Clark reverses himself on a number of occasions, saying at one time my client had no threat, never tried to get him to lie, was just trying to refresh his recollection, then later on said, well, I thought he was getting me to lie, but I'm not really sure. It's similar to a situation when you've got one eyewitness for a criminal matter, and the eyewitness says, yes, that's the individual I saw do it. Oh, no, that's not the individual I saw do it. Or maybe it is the individual I saw do it. The key is, can a rational jury, where there is no definite, yes, that's the man, yes, he attempted to influence me, can a rational jury, beyond a reasonable doubt, can they find, based on these facts, there's sufficient evidence to find him guilty of this obstruction count? This is the only evidence that's presented, Your Honors, and the cases I've read concerning this also do not deal with far more severe allegations of obstruction that are present in this case. The worst thing that can be said, according to one version of Mr. Clark's own testimony, and he reversed, it's not a situation where you're weighing the evidence and there's other evidence disputing what Mr. Clark says. Mr. Clark disputes what he says himself. In fact, most of what he says, Your Honors, absolves Mr. Lachey as opposed, and it is exculpatory evidence if you review this evidence. He didn't try to influence me. He didn't try to pressure me. Three occasions, Mr. Lachey supposedly came to him and says, don't you remember this? Do you remember this? Okay. Didn't ask him to lie. Didn't use any coercion or force. Didn't say you can have an accident like in some cases, or didn't say, can you sign this affidavit to lie? Didn't say anything like that. He says, trying to refresh his recollection, and those are the exact words that Mr. Clark used when he described what Mr. Lachey says. Is this severe enough to be an attempt to corruptly persuade someone? Okay. I don't think so. I think you've got to draw the line somewhere in terms of what evidence is sufficient for a jury's verdict, and I think this draws the line. Waffling, yes, he did it, no, he didn't do it, maybe he did. That's not enough for a jury to find beyond a reasonable doubt that my client committed this crime. In terms of the second issue, as the court is probably very well familiar with all the Booker litigation, this deals with kind of, I believe, a unique application of the Booker sentencing issues. This is a case that was decided after Blakely when everything was on hold and before the Booker decision came down. Okay. Judge Randa, knowing Booker would come down, gave an indeterminate sentence. He said, basically, I believe the guidelines are advisory, so I'm going to sentence him, Mr. Lachey, on both counts, knowing that the guidelines are advisory. Okay? But here's the error, and I think this falls in the face of some of the cases that have come since we filed our briefs, like George, Trudell. Judge Randa did not go over what the guideline range was. There was no calculation specifically of what the guideline range for Mr. Lachey would be on both of these counts. Okay? Now, this is not a case where there's one guideline range that is not in dispute. Mr. Lachey went to trial. He contested everything in this trial. You've got a situation where the pre-sentence writer recommended a 24 to 30-month guideline sentence in the pre-sentence report. As defense attorney, I recommended a 15 to 21-month sentence because I didn't believe my client should be entitled to a three-level increase for an aggravated role in the offense. The government recommended 21 to 27 months. So you got three different guideline ranges, and which guideline range did according to George or Trudell or Scott, which guideline range did just Randa pick to sentence Mr. Lachey? Neither one of them. None of them. He didn't mention it. He didn't discuss it. What he said is, okay, I'm going to throw out some other factors. Okay, now this is not reasonableness under 3535, where I believe that the court doesn't have to define every issue of reasonableness. This is the guidelines that Judge Randa used in an advisory matter, but he didn't even calculate what they were. We're asking that given these facts, it has an impact on Mr. Lachey in terms of the length of his sentence. If he would have gone what I recommended, the 15 months, it would have been less than what he got, the 24 months. So it does have an impact on Mr. Lachey. The bottom line is he didn't do what he should have done according to the cases that have followed, although he did half of it right. He had usually guidelines in an advisory matter. He didn't calculate them and specify them so the parties could respond. There was no hearing over whether or not my client had an aggravated role in the offense. There was no discussion of it. I brought it up in the various pleadings that were filed, but the judge didn't address it. He just gave him a straight sentence of 24 months, and that's it.
Did
and that was wrong.
Did you object at the time of sentencing?
What's that?
Did you object?
Did I object? I objected according to Booker, yes. And I asked for a determination. I filed a response to the pre-sentence writer indicating why I believed that my client was not entitled to a three-level increase. Yes, I did. I think he was aware of the issues involved, and I don't think he addressed those specifically.
Mr. Holzman,
yes.
is your client in prison?
No, he's been released, and I've gone over with him the pros and cons of proceeding with the appeal on that issue, and he wishes to proceed. Yes, but he has been released, but he still wants to proceed and believes he was wrongfully sentenced. Okay. If there are no more any questions on any of this, I'll just leave whatever time I have open for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Ms. Johnson.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Tracy Johnson. I'm an assistant United States attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I represented the government at the district court level in this matter.
Ms. Johnson, because of the last question that I asked, the posture of the case, the fact that Mr. Lachey has been released, does that make any difference in your mind as to the posture of the case?
Well, Your Honor,
this is out of left field, I suppose.
Well, it is out of left field, but that's okay. I think that the issue is really moot. The defendant has served all of his time. He'd actually been, his bond had been revoked prior to going to trial. So by the time we had gone to trial, he had already served 15 months of the 24-month sentence that was going to be imposed on him by the court. So if this issue were to be remanded as requested by defense counsel, the only thing that could really happen to his benefit would be if the court would find that there was not sufficient evidence to uphold the conviction, and he would have just one conviction for conspiracy to commit marriage fraud versus two federal felony convictions. But with respect to the sentencing, remanding the sentencing would not make any difference with respect to his life. He is already out on supervised release and has been for some time. The government will request that this court affirm the conviction for obstruction of justice. The government does acknowledge that there were some times where the witness did go back and forth, but in the light most favorable to the government, it is clear that the jury could have reached this conclusion beyond a reasonable doubt. In looking at this, we request that you consider that this is in the purview of the jury and that the jury had an extensive amount of information available to it at the time that it was listening to Mr. Clark. Not only did Mr. Clark testify, and granted he was the only witness that testified as to this obstruction charge, but there was a lot of information that he provided that was also substantiated by other witnesses, making him a very credible witness. And so in the whole scheme of things, it is easy to see that the jury was able to find obstruction beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, defense counsel makes reference to the fact that there have been more egregious tampering cases that have come before this court. Well, in charging Mr. Lachey with obstruction of justice, we charged him with attempting to influence Mr. Clark's testimony, which he did, and that could be seen through the repetition. Mr. Lachey came to Mr. Clark on three separate occasions, according to his testimony, in an effort to quote-unquote, refresh his memory. Well, the one definite point that stands out is that he was attempting to refresh his memory over something that he did not witness, that he had absolutely no recollection of, which Mr. Clark testified to. He testified that, one, the two of them worked different shifts, so he never would have seen him given the check. And two, he testified that Mr. Lachey was no longer even really employed at the Citgo gas station when he received the check. So he's, in effect, asking him to remember something that he knew nothing about. And the jury could see through this and realize that Mr. Lachey was trying to influence his testimony. He repeatedly said, Mr. Clark, that he was not willing to lie. And the jury was also able to measure the relationship between these two gentlemen. I think that it's somewhat different when you're asking someone who is either the daughter of the defendant, who was one of the witnesses, or in the case of Mr. Clark, a former co-worker and friend of the defendant to testify. So arguably, no, he wouldn't want to get him in trouble. And he may have not been as forceful as someone else, but the jury was able to take all of this into consideration and to balance it out. And for this reason, the conviction should be affirmed. With respect to the second issue, the indeterminate sentencing that was given by Chief Judge Randa, the defendant was by no means prejudiced by the sentence given by the district court. Defense counsel made reference to the fact that there was not a specific guideline sentence that was taken into consideration. But the court was aware of the guidelines. He made reference to the PSR. There was a memorandum that was filed by the government stating that although there was a level 17 with respect to the obstruction of justice, that we were going to recommend that 3 points be eliminated due to the fact that we were not able to establish through trial testimony that Mr. Lachey actually committed the offense. And for those reasons, the fact that he looked at all the statutory factors under 18 U.S.C. 3553 and took into consideration a variety of factors, the protection of the community, the punishment, deterrence, I would ask that the decision for the 24 months the defense counsel is now objecting to be affirmed. And finally, just because it, at this point in the game, really is a moot issue.
Could resentencing affect the term of supervised release?
Your Honor, I'm not quite sure. It's my understanding that supervised release is based on the statutory maximum of the offense. And so if that is the case, then it would be no different.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. How much time does Mr. Holtzman have? He has 3 minutes.
I think the court asked a good question about the supervised release, and I'm not sure about that either. However, the term of supervised release may even be affected by whether or not my client was convicted of two counts or one count. But the bottom line is my client believes he was sentenced to too harsh a sentence. So we're proceeding with this. My client also, there's some discussion from Ms. Johnson concerning the credibility of Mr. Clark. I don't think the issue of credibility is before this court as to Mr. Clark. The question is what he said before the jury. If you refer to the transcript, it's replete with references that maybe aren't just forceful enough, according to Ms. Johnson, about what Mr. Clark said. He wasn't forceful enough. I think he was quite forceful when he said.
But evidently the jury was satisfied.
What's that?
Evidently, the jury was satisfied.
They were satisfied, but I don't think they were satisfied based on the testimony that they heard. When he said, I felt like he was refreshing my memory, when he was asked if he tried to pressure or push him to lie, he said, I felt that he was refreshing my memory. He never tried to get me to lie. Did he try to harass you, intimidate, or push you at all? No. John and I were friends.
So they didn't believe me.
Well, but then who was the witness for the government then?
They didn't believe that aspect, but he gave three different answers.
Yeah, but isn't... But how could a rational jury, when he gave three different answers...
Variety is the spice of life.
That's probably true. It is, but for, in terms of finding my client guilty of a crime beyond a reasonable doubt, I don't know if innocent, it's him, it's not him, is enough. As to
juries
the...
Juries look at a lot more than just what someone says.
Right. I understand
they
that.
They look at demeanor. They look at a lot
right,
of things.
Right. I know. But there is no additional information besides Mr. Clark's testimony that implicated Mr. Lachey in this attempt to corruptly persuade. And there's no evidence in the record that Mr. Clark's demeanor differed at all when he made statements that exonerated Mr. Lachey from when he didn't. And I think to read that into the record, I think his testimony, I think, is pretty clear. Mr. Lachey didn't try to pressure me. He didn't try to influence me or intimidate me. And as to the last count, Your Honors, as to the, I think we've dealt with the sentencing issue. That's really all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Holtzman. Mr. Holtzman, you served by appointment of the court, and we very much appreciate your fine efforts on behalf of your client. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Indeed, thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until the next scheduled oral argument period.